This is Healthline, a joint venture of WTIC News Talk 1080 and Yale Cancer Center. Yale Cancer Center is a resource for cancer programs throughout Connecticut, developing new advances in prevention, screening, diagnosis, and treatment. On Healthline, you'll hear from some of the leading doctors in the country. Healthline is not intended to provide medical advice. Yale Cancer Center urges you to consult with a qualified physician in your community for diagnosis and for answers to your medical questions. And now, our co-hosts, oncologists Ken Miller and Ed Chu.
Good morning and welcome to Healthline. My name is Dr. Ken Miller. I'm the director of the Survivorship Program at the Yale Cancer Center in New Haven. My co-host, Dr. Ed Chu, who's the chief adult oncologist at Yale Cancer Center, is traveling today and he'll be back with us next week. But for now, I would like to share with you again that Healthline is the Yale Cancer Center's way of providing you with the most up-to-date information on cancer every Sunday morning at 8:30 a.m. Healthline features some of the nation's leading cancer specialists who are on the forefront of the battle to fight cancer right here in our state of Connecticut. And we really have two goals with this program. One is to give you help by sharing the latest information, and the second is to give you hope, because there really is a lot of hope in the battle against cancer. If you would like to submit a question about cancer to Healthline, please email us at healthline@yale.edu, or you can call 1-888-234-4YCC. And if you'd like to listen to past editions of Healthline, or if you'd like to learn more about a specific kind of cancer, all of our shows are now posted on the Yale Cancer Center website, which is www.yalecancercenter.org. Well, today we're going to be discussing the role of oncology nursing. And I just want to mention, if you tuned in today to listen to a show about cancer genetic counseling, I apologize for the change. And we're going to be doing that instead on Sunday, February 25th, which actually is my birthday. So, but we have with us today, and we're very lucky to have two wonderful oncology nurses, Marianne Davies and Karen Underwood. So, and Karen, Marianne, thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you for having us.
You're welcome.
All right, so let me ask, the two of you really both have a tremendous wealth of knowledge in caring for people with cancer. Marianne, can you tell us a little bit about your background? How did you, how did you get into oncology nursing? And then I want to ask Karen the same thing.
Okay. Well, I've actually been in oncology nursing for more than 25 years and started with having a wonderful mentor in college who really introduced me to oncology nursing, and started out in an inpatient unit, bone marrow transplant unit, went on to become a clinical nurse specialist in oncology, and then later on as a nurse practitioner in the outpatient setting.
And Karen, and I want to hear a little bit, because I know you work with children also. Tell us about you.
Well, straight out of nursing school, one of our rotations was at a children's hospital that I went to in California, and I never would have picked that kind of nursing. You know, straight out of nursing school, everybody wants to go into emergency or whatever, but I found it amazing and rewarding and wonderful, and the sense of humor and life and everything. So I ended up in pediatrics doing hematology oncology, and then transitioned over to adults not too long ago.
So let me ask you, has anyone ever asked you, isn't it depressing?
No, not at all. And people do ask that all the time.
Yeah.
It's actually incredibly rewarding in oncology. You meet people at the most critical point in a diagnosis, and yet you get to be part of their family and help them through some very difficult times, but also learn so much from them. Patients are incredibly inspirational, and so are their families. So most days, certainly some depressing days, but on the whole, that isn't.
Yeah, I agree.
And I agree, too. What do you see as the primary role of oncology nurses? I mean, how do you spend your day, and what kind of work do you do?
I think that in all of our roles in oncology nursing, there are so many different ways we can interact with patients, from a research end to a nurse at the inpatient bedside or in the outpatient setting or as a nurse practitioner. Our priority role is really to help patients navigate through this entire process, whether it's diagnosis, whether it's managing their treatment, their disease, their symptoms, or even end-of-life care. So it's really being their advocate and helping them just navigate the entire process. So,
Karen, let me ask you along those lines. When someone first finds out that they have cancer, what's that experience like as you see it and go through it with them?
I think when I first get a patient, the first day they walk into the clinic, and it hits them like a sledgehammer, like, oh my God, this is real. And, I think our role is just to, help help them through that time. It's the hardest thing ever for anyone. Their whole entire life is impacted. Mm-hmm. Life as they knew it never will be for quite a while again. Everything changes. Their schedules change. Their families change. Everything changes for them. So, you know, we're just there to support them and listen to them because they have a lot to say and they have a lot of concerns. And we have a lot of support, you know, with our social work and other, you know, areas that we can help them through this.
What are some of the things that patients ask you?
Well, they do ask how their life is going to be changed. Are they ever going to return to normal again? Does this mean things are at the end of the road, or are they ever going to get back to some semblance of normalcy in their life? I think that's their chief concern. And then what is it all going to feel like, both physically and emotionally, as they go through this process?
And along those lines, I mean, you know, for everyone listening too, how do you respond to that in terms of, you know, if someone says, well, what's it like to get chemotherapy? What's it going to feel like? Is that something people ask?
I think they do ask that. They're very worried. We all have our stereotypes of what it's going to be like from watching movies from years ago. And the experience is much different than it used to be. When I started 25 years ago, people were in the hospital and incredibly sick as they were going through the process. And we've made so many advances in managing symptoms and administering treatments that patients don't have that same kind of experience. So you really have to break a lot of the stereotypes and re-educate them about how treatment is administered now and how patients will feel.
So I guess a large part of the role is teaching.
Yeah, huge.
Okay. Yeah. And also, you know, let me ask you about the emotional support aspect of things. How do you see your work in that regard?
I don't know. I just try to be as compassionate as I can, and you know, for some of us it comes a little more easy than others to be there for them. And sometimes it's just, you know, giving them a back rub and telling them, you know, I'm going to be here to help you through this. If you have any questions, call me, you know, anytime for anything. And mm-hmm. you know, just to be there for them and mainly listen to them, because they just want to hear that they're going to be okay, you know, and they're going to make it through this, and they're not going to be too sick, and, you know, exactly.
You know, by the way, I'll just share a personal story. As you know, my wife, Joan, was treated for leukemia about 7 years ago, and I remember when she, the night she started chemotherapy, and the nurse that was with us that night was also named Mary Ann, by the way, but I remember it was as upbeat an event, an evening, as possible. Because there was this feeling of hope and that we could get through it and that we were like part of a team.
Yeah, I hear a lot of patients say that too. When they come in there, they think it's going to be kind of depressing for them. And then they come in and they see people laughing and smiling and joking and patients talking amongst each other. And, mm-hmm. you know, and they find that it's not anything what they anticipated it to be. So that it's true, you know, that makes a big difference, the atmosphere.
A personal connection that you have with patients, because you are sharing so many important things with them as they're going through this process, that you become family, you become friends. It becomes an incredible support system for them, because a lot of their family and friends, perhaps outside of the cancer center, don't understand what they're going through. So it's really kind of becomes a safe haven for them to share a lot of their thoughts.
You know, interesting you mentioned it, because, you know, it is, in a sense, like going on a journey, and, you know, your family and friends haven't been there. Mm-hmm. You have, I mean, as oncology nurses who've been doing this. And so it's almost like being a guide, a friend, mm-hmm. a family member is really a nice way to put it also. Well, let me ask you, in terms of the clinical structure of, you know, of the Yale Cancer Center and nursing, how do the oncologists and the nurses and everyone work together in terms of teamwork to get this job done?
I think one of the benefits of coming to a larger academic cancer center is that there are teams and there are units of oncologists and nurses that do work together very, very closely. We meet frequently during the week. We do discuss how we're going to manage patient care, discuss some of the needs of patients and how we can go about meeting those needs, both from a very basic managing symptoms all the way to advancing research and helping patients. From a broad perspective. So it's really a very exciting environment. There's always something new happening, always some new research going on, and we get to participate in that at every single level, whether it's as a research nurse or as an infusion room nurse or an inpatient nurse or in any of the other divisions of the cancer center. So it's really pretty exciting, I think, for us.
Well, we'd like to remind you to email your questions to us at healthline@yale.edu, and we're going to take a short break for a medical minute. And please stay tuned to learn more information about oncology nursing with Mary Ann Davies and Karen Underwood from the Yale Cancer Center.
This is a Medical Minute brought to you as a public service by the Yale Cancer Center. Breast cancer is the second most common cancer in women. In Connecticut alone, approximately 3,000 women will be diagnosed with breast cancer this year. But there is a new hope for these women. Earlier detection, non-invasive treatments, and novel therapies provide more options for patients to fight breast cancer. In 2006, more women are learning to live with this disease than ever before. Women should schedule an annual mammogram beginning at age 40 or earlier if they have risk factors associated with the disease. With screening, early detection, and a healthy lifestyle, breast cancer can be defeated. Clinical trials are currently underway at federally designated comprehensive cancer centers such as the Yale Cancer Center to make innovative new treatments which have not yet been approved by the Food and Drug Administration available to patients. For more information, visit their website at yalecancercenter.org. That's yalecancercenter.org.
Well, welcome back to Healthline. This is Dr. Ken Miller. I'm here with Mary Ann Davies and Karen Underwood discussing the role of oncology nursing in cancer care. So I want to start out with an email question that we got. This is from Chitra, who lives in West Hartford. She says, I'm nearly 10 months into treatment for breast cancer. My friends and family aren't as much help as they were initially. How can I reach out to them?
Well, actually, Karen and I were discussing this earlier. As we had said, family and friends may not have ever been through this process before, so they're not always sure what to expect or how a patient, you know, what needs a patient might have. And so even though a patient is very burdened with having to go through the cancer care and the therapy, they do need to communicate very well with their family members. And if they're not always able to orchestrate how somebody can help, maybe if they had a very close friend who could champion trying to pull resources together. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I think family and friends are very supportive in the very beginning, because they hear the diagnosis, they're just as devastated and forget that this treatment process can go on for well more than a year, sometimes a few years. Mm-hmm. And as it goes on, sometimes your needs become increasingly more demanding, whether it's even transporting kids to events or making meals or cleaning the house, just doing daily activities. So it's helpful to find one significant person that can help you orchestrate and rally the troops, per se, to help get some help.
And that's a good question, too. That is a really good question.
So let me ask you, talking about children, if a mother or father has cancer, Karen, do you encourage your patients to bring their family in when they get treatment? And what's that experience like for them?
You know, I personally, because my background is working with kids with cancer, I think it's a great idea, because it's not just the individual going through the process, it's the whole family who's affected. So I think it's great for people to understand and know the whole process. I really do.
Does it end up being frightening for children, or does it have the opposite effect if they get involved?
I don't think it's frightening. I think probably more frightening is when they don't know what's going on. I think it's being part of something gives them a little bit more control, you know, whereas before, mm-hmm. before if they don't know what's going on, then they're a little more unsure and they don't know how to act. But if they see it and they're there and they feel like they're part of it, I think it's very important.
I want to ask a little bit more about side effects, obviously that's something that patients and families ask about and they mm-hmm. think about, a lot of it based on older information. how are we doing in terms of, in general, and then I've got some specific questions, but how are we doing in general in terms of managing side effects?
I think we've made great strides in advancing symptom management. It's really become a focus, certainly, of oncology nursing. It's really what our mission is as a group and as a society nationally. It used to be years ago that the biggest side effect people would think of and did experience was nausea and vomiting, and we've really got that pretty well under control. We've got some great new medications that are out, and we're able to utilize those. Management of fatigue and pain control, especially, we've just really made some great advances. So the picture is now changing because therapies are changing, so now there are new side effects that we've got to learn to manage that patients that we didn't have with other treatments in the past. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So the field is always changing, but it's on our radar screen to continue to look at new ways of managing symptoms. But
All right, here's another email. This is from Mary, who lives in New London, and she says, I've been very tired while on treatment with chemotherapy for colon cancer. What advice do you have for me?
Well, fatigue is all part of it. It's kind of hard getting around. I mean, it depends if it's because of low red blood cell counts. You know, there's things we can do to help with that. Or, you know, I mean, chemo, it beats you up. It just really does. So kind of the name of the game is not to be a martyr, not to push yourself. Mm-hmm. You know, get on the couch, get the remote in your hand if you have to. And, you know, you have to take it easy and don't push yourself. Even if you're having, you know, a so-called good day, still don't push yourself on that day because you will pay the next day or the following day. So just try to take it easy. Don't be a martyr. You know, sometimes it's hard for people to ask for help, but during this time, just till you get through the hump, it's important to ask for help.
Let me ask about hair loss. Is that, you know, is that any different than it was?
It is different. It used to be that most of the strongest chemotherapy agents or even radiation therapy caused hair loss. Some of the newer medications that we're using do not cause as significant a hair loss, and some don't cause hair loss at all. So it's really important for patients to specifically ask that question of their oncologist or their nurse, because it doesn't mean that once you have a diagnosis that you're going to lose your hair.
So let me ask you, what I find is sometimes patients will say things to you, Karen, or you, Marianne, that they won't tell me. What's your thoughts about that? I mean, maybe it's me, or maybe it's a more general thing, but what do you think?
I don't think it's you. I think that patients feel like they need to they need to protect the physician's time as well and respect that. And I think that they don't want to bother you with some issues that they might think are unimportant, or they don't know if they're important or not. Mm-hmm. And they might think they're silly questions or unrelated to their therapy. So they will run it by us almost to triage whatever the issue is.
Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah.
All right, so I want to ask you about pain a little bit also. That's something where, you know, I think we found that pain is very much underreported. Are patients worried that if they tell the doctor that they have pain, that it's going to be perceived in a bad fashion?
I think so. I think that they're afraid to say that if they have pain, that maybe the doctor will not want to give them treatment or the same treatment that they had received. Sometimes patients are afraid to say they have pain because they're afraid of what it might mean.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So they need to be provided, and I think that's what we do best, too, is provide them for an outlet to express what all their symptoms are, especially pain, so that we can help manage it. Some patients are afraid to say they have pain because they think there's nothing we can do about it, and so many different things we can, and we have to. That's part of our job, is to educate them as well.
I'm going to ask you, Karen, what can we do about pain?
Well, we could do a lot of things about pain. I mean, you can start with, distraction and stuff like that. And then if you need some people are adverse to taking medications and they won't want to mention it because they don't want to become addicted to, any specific drugs or anything like that, because there's a bad, drugs have a bad rap, especially narcotics. But, whatever it takes to get you through the hump, you can start with, something as simple as Tylenol even, and then progress up, to Percocet, or it depends. I mean, nobody should really have to live in pain, because then you can't really function the way you need to move on and get through all this.
Because you work with children, how do children let you know, if not in words, how do they let you know that they're having pain?
Most of the time in words, or they cry and they'll say ow or something like that, and then you have to. And the hard part with kids is getting through the parents. Because a lot of the parents don't want the kids to become addicted to, morphine or whatever it is, but they're in real pain. I mean, because sometimes cancer does cause pain, peripheral pain, neuropathic pain, and you have to really listen to them and watch them and see if they're not playing in the playroom like they used to, and, just other little signs like that if they don't verbalize it.
Well, thank you. And we're going to take a break for a survivor story. And please come back and join us in a couple minutes to talk more with Marianne Davies and Karen Underwood about the role of oncology nursing in cancer care.
A few years ago, the diagnosis of cancer was a death sentence for many patients. But today, thanks to advances in clinical research, we're turning the corner in the battle against cancer. There are over 10 million cancer survivors now living in the U.S. They are the true heroes in the war against cancer. Here's the story of a hero from Guilford.
My name is Kathy. I am a cancer survivor, and I am the mother of three girls. I was diagnosed with breast cancer at age 40. I had had my baseline mammogram at 36, but with no family history of breast cancer, I was told to return when I was 40 for another mammogram. I got the diagnosis that no one prepares you for, cancer. But I was lucky. I was referred to the Yale Cancer Center, where I met Dr. Lannan. I underwent a double mastectomy in the summer of 2004. I still take tamoxifen daily, but have been cancer-free ever since. If there is one message that I want to convey to all women, it is to get a regular mammogram. I am a perfect example of how early detection is part of the cure.
This survivor's story has been brought to you by Yale Cancer Center.
Well, welcome back to Healthline. This is Dr. Ken Miller. I'm here in the studio with Marianne Davies and Karen Underwood, who are oncology nurses at Yale, discussing the role of oncology nursing in cancer care. Well, let's say share with the listening audience that we've received many, many emails over the last 12 months that we've been doing Healthline. Some we try to respond to individually off the air, some we try to respond to on the air. And I thought it was a good time to review some of the questions that were brought up to us, and some would fall into the category of, are they truth or are they myth? So let me ask some of these. We had one that talked about this. A young woman says, after treatment with chemotherapy, I'm afraid that I'm dangerous to my family and friends.
No, that's a myth.
Okay.
A lot of patients feel like they might be spreading something, or that somehow the chemotherapy might be oozing out of their pores, or somehow could be dangerous to family members. In fact, the patients themselves might be at risk for being exposed to other family members or other people that you meet in the community, because their immune system might be a bit suppressed during certain periods of time. But I think the oncology nurses and the rest of the staff are very good at letting patients know when that time of risk would be, and still encouraging patients to be very active in their life. The only thing I would say in terms of being at risk is that a lot of new treatments now are being administered at home. Mm-hmm. And whether they're pills or whether they're injections, patients need to just be careful that it's not as, you don't certainly want either children to be picking those things up or other family members to be picking them up, because it's not, it would be much riskier for somebody who didn't have cancer to obtain those things. So that's really the only risk. It's just being cautious about things that you have in your home, whether it's pain medication or whether actual treatment.
All right, but essentially what we're telling the listener is, no, you're not dangerous.
No.
Right.
You're not dangerous to anybody, no.
All right, so here's another one. I think sometimes people think it, even though they don't say it. Some people are afraid cancer is contagious. So what do you think, Karen?
Absolutely not.
Okay, myth.
I mean, there are some that, you know, of course, hereditary in that way, catchy, I suppose, but not, it's not like catching a cold or a flu or something like that that you can give to anyone. If anything, just as Marianne said before, you're more at risk of catching viruses and things from, you know, the air than anything.
All right, so along those lines, one of our listeners wrote in and said, after I have chemotherapy, I have a feeling that I should completely avoid my family and wear a mask if I go out in public.
No, not at all. We want you to be as active and participate in your family activities as possible. I mean, if you're feeling run down, then take a rest, or if it's that one period when you're your immune system's a little bit suppressed. But overall, you don't need to, and we don't want you to hibernate in your house and not be exposed to everyone.
All right, so here's one. Here's one for you, Karen. It says our listener is writing in here that when I get pain after a shot of Neulasta, maybe you'll tell us what that is, does that mean that my treatment isn't working and the cancer is getting worse?
No. Well, first of all, Neulasta is something that, it's an injection you get to help stimulate your white blood cells to grow. And they grow in your bone marrow, so it's common that you would have bone pain and aches and things like that. So if it doesn't mean that the chemo isn't working or anything like that, it's just part of the process. And you can take Tylenol for that,
And it doesn't last either. It's very brief amount of time that you have that bone discomfort or achiness.
All right, let me another one. This has to do with depression This gentleman named Bob, who's from Stanford, is writing in, many days I feel depressed. Is that a normal reaction?
Well, it is very normal. Your life has been turned upside down. You don't have the same day-to-day activities often that you had before. So depression is very common. It's also what we would call situational depression in most cases. So it is associated with your new diagnosis or your current diagnosis or your treatment. And so there are a lot of new antidepressant medications that we can give patients. And I know people feel that that has a bad rap too, but we really can help with that symptom.
Yeah,
so
it's
common. And also some of the medications we give or some of the chemotherapy treatments can stimulate or increase the risk of depression. And it's important for patients to let us know about that because there are things we can do about it.
Yeah, I've seen this as well. Sometimes people really suffer from depression and really can be alleviated sometimes quite easily. So I think it's an important message to get out there. I want to change topics. We'll get a little bit away from truth or myth, but talk about the issue of intimacy when people have cancer or when they're receiving chemotherapy. Karen, what do patients say to you about that? What's on their mind?
Well, they want to know if it's okay to have sex while they're undergoing chemotherapy, and that's, you know, I mean, in general, of course, sex is a good thing, but you know, when your counts are low, you have to be very careful, use protection, because mainly risk of infection, risk of bleeding, and stuff like that. You just have to be really careful. And again, we, you know, monitor everybody's who's going through chemo, the counts. So we, you know, we will let you know. And, you know, it's just a safer thing to do as far as, you know, being susceptible to infection when your counts are low. So you have to be careful.
But also the issue of intimacy is very, very important. Patients don't feel like themselves. They don't feel attractive. Their body might look different. They might be just feeling so tired that they might not feel like they have the energy or the interest in having an intimate relationship. And and it's certainly maybe there's not as much spontaneity in your life anymore. Everything's got to be planned out. So it, you know, you can bring that up, that topic up with your nurse or your physician, because sometimes it's just a matter of readjusting your day and talking with your significant other about how you're feeling and providing other ways to have intimacy in your relationship. Maybe they're not the standard things that you would think of before, but still being connected.
Yeah, which is very nice. What things, if for our listeners, what kind of problems or topics do you want patients to call you for or bring up to you?
I always tell my patients anything that they can think of that they think, even if it's, you know, a silly question or whatever. No question is ever really too silly. Because if you think of it, then you want to know about it. So not to feel, you know, funny or embarrassed or stupid or anything like that, whether it's anything from nausea to constipation to, you know, intimacy to anything at all. Any question is a good question.
We also encourage patients to write things down. Get a little book and write things down, because it notoriously you leave the visit and you think of a million things. And so write them down and either call back later or at your next visit bring it in so that we can help answer those questions.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I know that for myself too, because unless I write it down, sometimes it slips right by. But anyways, we'd like to encourage you, if you have questions for Marianne or for Karen or for Healthline, we encourage you to go to our website, which is yalecancercenter.org. For more information about cancer and the resources that are available to you both here at Yale in Connecticut and throughout the country. I want to thank you, Marianne and Karen, for taking time to discuss oncology nursing on Healthline. So thanks for being here.
Thank you.
And remember, tune in to WTIC News Talk 1080 every Sunday morning at 8:30 a.m. for Healthline with the Yale Cancer Center. And our next program will feature a discussion of cancer genetic counseling with Ellen Matloff. Until then, this is Dr. Ken Miller from the Yale Cancer Center wishing you a safe and healthy week.
You've been listening to Healthline, a joint venture of Yale Cancer Center and WTIC News Talk 1080. Join us next Sunday morning from 8:30 to 9 a.m. for another edition of Healthline on WTIC News Talk 1080.